All right, welcome back, everybody. With Tom Cruise having another movie coming out this summer, the new Mission Impossible, we're going to talk about Cocktail. No, I'm just kidding. We're talking about the first Mission Impossible.
Dude, I love Cocktail. It's such a good movie.
Oh, gosh. No, we're going to just talk about, you know, Mission Impossible and look at it from the idea of, you know, if that was coming out today, the original, not, you know, the second half of Dead Reckoning, would that still be cool now based on what we've seen in the other movies since then? This is specifically just the first movie, though, even though I'm going to be commenting quite a bit on all of them.
All the sequels.
But some of us haven't seen all of them. That guy over there.
Turtle.
Yeah, Turtle hasn't seen all of them either.
Actually, I'm pretty sure Turtle has seen most of
Deuce
them.
The Deuce hasn't seen them all.
But, so yes, the first Mission Impossible. The fun thing I think about the first Mission Impossible that I would love to get your all thoughts on, did you notice, and you wouldn't, but did you notice, all the Mission Impossible movies, you know, typically have gunfights. The first Mission Impossible has
zero
gunfights. Ethan Hunt never once fires a gun, and I think there's only three gunshots the entire movie.
They're the assassination.
That was a knife.
Was
assassination
it?
Was a knife.
Was it a knife?
Oh, yeah, well, okay. You have the gun when he was, like, shooting himself.
The fake shooting himself.
Fake two shots, and then he double shoots in the train, I think, at the end. That's it. Is it? That's it?
Yeah. I don't remember all where the shots were, but
so it was just the
very
villain.
Little gunplay. It's very much...
Yeah, it's just one guy.
Yeah.
John White is the only guy shooting around crazy.
That's it. Which surprises nobody considering present day.
Oh, goodness.
But no, I just thought, like, so they go and, you know, green light Mission Impossible, and they supposedly try to bring in the cast from the show to be a part of it, but they plan to, like, kill them all off. They want to kill the entire original cast off in, like, the first act.
Okay, so hold on a minute.
So they wanted Emilio Estevez them.
Yes.
I'm gonna be the dumb guy, because I am. I did not know there was a show.
Well, there's a TV show.
What?
Yes,
it was based on a pretty old TV show from the 70s, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. You didn't know that?
You're not attached to the old cultural zeitgeist of anything before the 90s.
It's like,
no, sir.
I think it was like a more serious Get Smart kind of.
Yeah.
So Get Smart was also a TV show, if you didn't know that. It was all like gadgety fun.
He's all like, what's Get Smart?
Yeah.
We'll just say I
do. Do you even know Inspector Gadget?
I do know Inspector. Wasn't that a cartoon?
At least we have that.
Wasn't that a cartoon in the 90s? It was in the 90s. We're good.
Okay.
It was also a few not good movies. But yes, it was a cartoon first. But
shout out to Matthew Broderick.
But no, anyway. Well, he was only in like the first one.
Yeah.
And then like someone else.
Somebody else took
over.
They made more?
Yeah, there's more than one. But yeah, we're not talking about that.
Yeah.
But no, like, yeah, the cast was like, you're bringing us in and just immediately killing us off. You know, screw you. No, we're not going to participate. And then apparently a good chunk of the cast members who went and saw the movie, there was reports of, like, them walking out in the middle of the movie saying how they just hated it.
Really?
Yeah. Because it was such a departure from the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Even to the point that I don't remember the names. But, like, the studio head or somebody with the studio asked somebody associated with, like, that was making the show to come actually on set and wanted them to be on set for the movie to be, like, almost like a consultant. And the director just said, you're going to hate being here and we're going to argue every single day. So you probably shouldn't just not be here.
The director is Brian De Palma. He made Scarface. Like, he made, like, very thriller murder movies, which is kind of what this is too.
Yeah.
So he just was like, I'm taking this a serious route. So they don't try to, I still love how they had gadgets and technologies all through there. But they don't try to overdo it.
Green light.
Yeah. They did not overdo it at all, which is actually one of the things that I loved about this movie is they kept it like, even like the whole, the mask, like everything like
that. Practical.
That, like, it was just, it's fantastic. Like, it just kept everything so grounded. And at that point in time in my life, especially, I wanted more grounded stuff, more realistic stuff, more gritty stuff, stuff that just like was a little less. Like these days, I'm like, yeah, give me the wacky, give me like go over the top. I'm fine with that. But back then, it was just just wanting to get something more serious and more real. And Mission Impossible kind of nailed a lot of that.
Yeah, for sure. I think actually what impressed me most about this movie was, and I did see it when I was a kid, but then I went and rewatched it again, is it was like an anti-spy movie. You know, it was definitely like not like, oh, I'm going to be a spy and I'm going to go and do my mission. And that
it was an inside job for spies, to get rid of. Yeah. Like it was really
cool.
It was like you actually get to see like a viewpoint into like what it is like, not just to be a spy, but when a spy has been betrayed.
Right.
And I always thought that was fascinating.
Spy versus spy.
Yeah.
All right. So I was going to say this, but that's that a Nintendo perfect game. Segue. Mm-hmm. I was going to say this, but it's the perfect segue. You said a whole, you know, they're being betrayed, spy versus spy. For those of us that have seen all the other Mission Impossibles, have you noticed that they almost recycle the exact same story over and over and over?
He's a man on the run. You're disavowed.
Disavowed. So first movie, 1996, Jim Phelps, which was Ethan Hunt's team leader, played by John Voight, he betrays the IMF to make money by selling the knock list, and Ethan Hunt is framed for it and disavowed. Mission Impossible 2, Sean Ambrose, Ethan Hunt's colleague that has doubled him many times, played by Doug Ray Scott, betrays the IMF to make money via a pharmaceutical company with a cure to the Chimera virus. Mission Impossible 3, Musgrave, Ethan Hunt's supervisor, played by Billy Crudup. I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Crudup,
okay. Yep. Betrays the IMF to make money with Owen Davian selling the rabbit's foot, and Ethan is framed and disavowed. Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. There's no IMF traitor. But Ethan Hunt is disavowed when framed for bombing the Kremlin. Mission Impossible Rogue Nation from 2015. Solomon Lane, not IMF, but an MI6 agent turned terrorist, played by Sean Harris. Ethan Hunt is disavowed because he's framed as the terrorist. All right. Mission Impossible Fallout. August Walker, a CIA agent this time, played by Henry Cavill, betrays the CIA and frames Ethan Hunt as a terrorist. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, Part 1.
Don't spoil it for me.
I'm not going to spoil it.
It's
not going to spoil it. There is no IMF, CIA, or MI6 traitor in that one. But he is on the run. single movie.
Maybe that's why after 3, they all blur together for me. I watched them all, but I never rewatched any of them because I didn't love them. I do love 1.
Yeah.
I love it, and I guess I'm kind of playing my hand a little early here, partly because of the cinematography. Like, I think we need to talk a little bit about the cinematography, like the way the shots are framed, the way the coloring, everything, like the way the scenes are split, like almost like, I won't say comic book style. I would have thought it would be like maybe a throwback to the TV show, but I don't know because I've never actually watched the TV show.
I think
he's known for using the split screen to like show several things in flight. I love the color part. You can see him hanging in the CIA. The black and white of how well the CIA room is. It's all practical. He's hanging down, and it's so perfect contrast of him. Perfect lighting. Even in the train when he's explaining we're going to heist from the CIA Langley headquarters, it's this like this slow panning shot from like, you know, Ring James and Rames and like
Bing
Leon. Ramos. The Leon guy, and then it pulls into what Tom Cruise is, and it's like this really cool. I really knew, like I know of Dutch angle, which is like you just shove the camera up from below.
You kind of do some weird thing, and it's at an angle.
That's when Tom Cruise's world is collapsing when he sits and he talks to Kitteridge. Then it's suddenly the angle is you're like, what the heck is? Why is he like this? It's because his world is now disoriented. He's like, wait. Everyone here was already in the embassy, so you have another team this was just a mole hunt. Like, the way he showed that.
Well, so for me, so two things that I want to call out on the cinematography for me. One, about the opening, where they actually show flashes of later on in the movie, like during, like,
but
you
never
don't
happened.
Really see, but yeah, some of them, happened. Some of them never happened. I think
there was a love scene between Ethan Hunt and John Voight's like wife.
Yeah,
that never actually happens in the movie.
It was kind of implied, though.
It's implied, but that scene never happens.
See, in when you're writing a book, that's what's called the unreliable narrator, and I love that. Because it makes it look like it's one thing.
Do you think it's unreliable narrator, or do you think they cut?
I think there was some cuts. Because, like, I swear there were some flash. I mean, those flashes came by quick, but I swear there were some of them that were actual shots from the movie. I thought that was interesting, because you don't often see movies that do that. The second thing I wanted to point out was that restaurant with the fish tanks.
Oh, yeah.
The colored, like, the blue just, like, really stood out to me. And, like, you're looking at them walking up to it, you're like, that looks dangerous. Like, why would anybody do that? Like, there's going to be fish everywhere at some point. And then, sure enough.
Well, it, I mean, yeah. And that, of course, is one of the more famous scenes for Tom Cruise running.
Oh, yeah.
So he had never done...
He runs in every movie.
He had never done an action movie till then, I think. This was his first, like...
Top Gun doesn't count as an action movie?
Well, where he's doing the action, I guess.
Stunt.
Okay, I'll give you
stunt
that.
Work. So... Top Gun's an action movie, but it's more drama too, I think.
Yeah.
A lot more than this. So I'll ask a big question. And even watching it now, the plot is so convoluted. I feel like the plot is very, very complex. I'm like, when I was a kid, I was like, wait, what did he learn from that Bible? What the heck? And I did not understand that when he meets John Voight later.
The Gideons.
Right? Yeah. And so he's John Voight is telling a version, but Tom Cruise in his head is looking at the true version of what happened. John Voight is like, Kittredge did it, but Tom Cruise is like,
figured it out by that point.
He figured out it's John Voight, so he's trying to like playing that in his head. I did not know that as a kid.
Well, see, that's
I
what
well,
like,
I
so
mean,
confused.
But Ed is a little above a kid. I'll give you that.
That leans in the whole thing, the unreliable narrator thing I was talking about. They showed you one thing to make you believe that you're seeing one thing. Mm-hmm. And then it actually ended up being something completely different. And I love how the movie flips that.
Well, so it's funny you say
and
that.
Actually comes back and explains that. Like, you're absolutely right. The whole, like, Tom Cruise's, Ethan Hunt's, like, viewpoint is totally different. Like, he saw something different than what was being told to him.
Yeah, the dialogue
again,
is different.
Again, it's unreliable narrator being fed to you, so they're not actually treating the audience as stupid. And I love that. It's like they're not spoon-feeding you everything.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's funny you say that because we just had that episode about James Bond. And in my mind, the twist in that one was not obvious with Sean Bean actually being the traitor. But in this one,
is that because,
like,
Sean Bean always dies and you just assumed he was dead?
No, I mean, I guess. But anyway, in this one, I really feel like from the beginning, I was like, yeah, his boss is totally the bad guy. Like, there's no way it was someone else. Like, the way he was acting during his, like, running away because he'd been found out or whatever. And then, like, the angle of the gun was all weird. Like, okay, he definitely shot himself there. So it was funny because, like, when I was a kid and I saw this, it definitely seemed convoluted, confusing. And then I rewatched it now, and some of that, yes, was still
you have
convoluted.
To pay a lot of close attention.
Yeah, you have to pay attention.
There is a lot of
subtle
connective tissue.
But the main thing you're trying to figure out the whole movie, like, was so obvious to me. From the get-go, I'm like, oh, yeah, it was definitely him. Yeah,
they. I mean, it was, looking back now, they obviously tried to make the Kittredge character look evil a lot. Like, this angry boss of, like, oh, you did it, I'm going to, you know. And he frames his parents. I completely forgot that plot line when I was looking at that. I was like, oh,
I
forgot that happened.
Drug smugglers?
Yeah, they're drug smugglers.
The Kittredge guy was your standard, like, damn it, Ethan, you're a loose cannon. Like, you know, that kind of guy.
Turn in your gun in your badge.
You know, that's what they definitely leaned a little heavy into that. On,
he came back for the most latest one, right?
Yeah.
Oh, he's sorry, back in. Spoilers.
No,
sorry.
I mean, he was in the
trailer, so you know.
He was in the trailer, and also he's been in the more recent ones, like not even just Dead Reckoning, but he was in another one at least. So, I think really? So. Maybe I'm wrong, but it was like, I think it was whatever the one was before Dead Reckoning. Again, they all kind of blend together. Yeah, they all maybe blend together.
Fallout, I think. But no, so I want to go back to, you mentioned the whole, both of you did actually, the big aquarium place. I had seen years ago an interview with Tom Cruise, and they were asking him something about that. And he was like, yeah, so like when they're setting up that shot, they're like, all right, yeah, we're going to go ahead and count to three, and then we'll hit it, and you run. And he's like, well, wait, are you going to do 1, 2, 3 and then hit it, or are you going to like hit it on three? And they're just like, well, I mean, we'll like count to three and hit it. And he's like, no, guys, when are you going to actually push the button? And they're all confused, like, what's the problem? And he's like, all this water is going to come down on me. I need to know exactly when to run.
Yeah. It's crazy they didn't, professionals didn't think about that. Right? It's like, that is thousands of gallons of water. Yeah. Like, that's going to take your feet out.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, so, I wonder if that was a single take thing for them.
I think it was. I think I saw the making of it, and I think it was. They got it on the first one.
Oof, man.
Because he was adamant.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah, exactly. I think I saw that.
A tech nerd call out the... So it's Ving, not Rames, it's Roms.
It's Ving Rames, I think.
Really?
Yeah, maybe it's Ving Rames. Dude, you're just making his name weirder than every time you say it.
Okay.
Ramses?
No, Roms. Dave Ramsey? Like, I could spell it for you. I don't know. I guess I don't know how to say it.
So his character, the hacker.
Maybe it is Rames.
So the hacker guy, he's like, did you see when they're like, hey, we're going to get you the latest equipment to hack? And he's like, IBM 686 thinking machines with the enhanced AI chip.
The AI chip? I'm like, wait, what?
AI chip? 1996.
We're just getting those now.
It's not a chip, though. It's in the cloud.
I mean, the NVIDIA stuff has AI stuff.
Everything's
on it. Okay. Is 686 before x86? I think so, right? Maybe?
686, no.
Is it the same x86?
No, because there's just the processors. No, that's the processor levels, because I know this because we had a 386 that came out right before the 486, which could have done full VGA graphics, and I was pissed because I was playing Wheel of Fortune without full VGA graphics with my 386.
But you gotta remember, the government has stuff like they're all years x86. Before we do. We're just now getting it, but they had it.
Yeah, the top of the line government
and
stuff.
And his thing is, I love the point where he's like, and I get to keep the equipment. Right.
Yeah. Like, I would so do that too. If it were me in that position, like, and I get to keep it, right?
Okay, one thing I have to bring up is the scene, the iconic scene. We've already touched on it a little bit in the computer room.
Yeah,
coming through the events. And what I loved when I was
CIA agent ever.
When I was a kid and as an adult, and I didn't even get a chance to rewatch the movie. I just remember all of it pretty much. Like that scene, the attention to detail for everything that they had to time, and like even like the little like everybody else's jobs, like it was a team effort. It wasn't just like everybody just remembers the whole thing. He falls and does this. Mm-hmm. Like that's the thing. But the entire scene is just a masterclass in both filmmaking, writing, and then like anticipation and like being kind of a, like a thriller basically, like. Will he touch? Won't he? Like they spelled out everything ahead of time, but it wasn't an exposition dump. It was just part of natural conversation. It was just kind of a masterclass leading up to that whole thing, and then the execution was even down to like the person putting a little bit of like stuff in the coffee, so the guy had to go to the bathroom. Like even little details
Claire,
like that.
One of the few
like there was everything like set up pretty much perfect, I think.
Okay, so I do love the scene, but I'm also very nitpicky about it.
Okay.
Oh boy.
First thing I was going to mention is that the floor, when the guy walks in and he's just hanging above him, waiting, it's essentially a mirror surface.
Oh yeah. Why
even the slight little like swaying he's doing, you're going to notice movement and you're going to look down like.
Look down.
Most unobservant CIA agent on the planet.
He was sick, okay?
He was sick, and he's now manning a radio tower in Alaska.
Yeah, that's true. So there was that.
Mm-hmm.
there is the fact that when he was in there, he started, you know, throwing up in a trash can, right? Why is there a trash can in there?
Why would there be?
So that he can try to throw up.
Who's cleaning that room if he's the only person with access?
Why would they allow him to bring in
food and drink to where we'd have trash?
Yeah, but if you're going to spend many hours in there, maybe that's allowed. I don't know.
I know
you're being nitpicky.
I'm being nitpicky.
But I'm just sitting here thinking, like, if you're in there all day and this is your job, you're going to probably have a trash can.
But for what?
You know, like, in case you have to puke. Maybe you come in here and you're sick.
The bring the drink in part.
But you don't think you're going to drink in there.
No. That's the thing.
But he did.
Bring the drink in part. It's such an America thing that the mainframe computer has it. It has a drink holder.
There's a cup holder.
It's a cup holder, and he puts the cup in there.
So it's obviously allowed.
Yeah.
Maybe so, but I don't think it would be allowed.
And then I acknowledge the whole point, like, he's not, like, super observant, but I'm, like, going, that's just a tension thing for the movie. They got to have something, like... But I'm just saying, like, all the other small details, like, the team... I think it's more the teamwork thing. Everybody had their job. And everybody executed, and it did not go exactly to plan, but they still executed on it, and I love that, and I think that's why that scene is still fondly remembered to this day.
And I think I remember they're driving away after that, and they all look like so exhausted. Mm-hmm. They're like, they don't even talk to each other. They're just like,
and that's also pretty real.
I didn't take it as exhaustion from that. I took it as in like. Nobody but Ethan Hunt knew what they were stealing, because when he saw it was the Nautilus, he was like, oh my god! I think it was more like shock of to what they just.
Oh really?
Not so much like, oh my god, I'm exhausted. I did it. Yeah. Just like,
I guess that's a fair point.
Wing Rhames later says, I think Tom Cruise says to Wing, because this is the scene right where Jean Reno thinks he has the Nautilus. He actually does.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Cruise just does some magic tricks, convinces him he doesn't. He throws it in the trash.
Apparently he actually learned sleight of hand to do that. That's crazy.
He picks it up out of the trash can, and he gives it to Vin Rames. And he said, the reason you keep it safe. And he's like, I trust you because you wouldn't have done this job if you knew what we were stealing. Because if he told them, like, it's the Nautilus, they would have been like... I mean, so clearly Jean Reno... Leon, the professional.
Yeah,
that's right. Leon the professional.
He was Claire's pick, so she clearly brought him in as having this.
She was one of the bad guys.
Yeah, she's one of the bad guys. That's why she brought him in. Jean Reno. Yeah, I said his name.
Yep. Yeah, you did. Yeah,
I've seen him in a ton of stuff, but yeah, I never knew.
So that dude's. There's so many iconic things. His knife falling down. From and like tongue, and he opens the door.
Did you pick up on that though? Not the falling in thing. When he first was gonna kill one of those guys, and he like slams his arm and stops him. That's when he sees the knife and recognizes
the same as the
knife from earlier.
Killed his partner.
So that's why he's like, this is, you know. So he starts putting clues together as far back as that. Before he even sees the Gideon Bible.
So he already knew...
Those damn Gideons.
He's the bad guy. I still remember that line. Yeah, he already knew. So Jean Reno is bad. Jim is bad. Claire, he's still unsure on.
He's iffy. That's why he does the little mask thing.
Yeah. And then he clarifies that.
But hey, before we go too far away, though, one more thing about the drop-in.
Mm-hmm.
This is not me a nitpick. This is just the thing I read, and I was like, if this is real, I wish there was footage of this. Apparently, they kept doing that over and over, and he kept banging his head on the floor over and over and over until he had the idea. He put a bunch of, like, I guess, coins in his shoes to help, like, counterbalance so that he wouldn't keep hitting his head.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, if that's true, I'd love to see the footage of him just donk over and over.
He's gonna be hanging there. They're like, guys.
Oh yeah,
I'm not weighted right.
He's 2 inches off the freaking ground. Yeah, he somehow can go down like this and catch
a droplet
of sweat.
That's that was a missed opportunity. They should have just done back of the hand catch. I think like this.
Yeah,
because you can
more
clearly tell,
like,
that's a completely separate shot that they set up with the hand with the water drop and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like,
but was it cool?
Yeah, it was cool. It was freaking cool.
See?
Well,
there
no,
we
it
go.
It was hot because he was sweating.
It was. Shut up. We don't need your dad humor. Get out of here.
We were joking about, I think I said toast. Toast.
Toast.
Toast. Like when it goes to red bars.
Yeah.
But okay, here's my nitpick with that is like, why do they even have the green, yellow, red thing when all that really matters was once they got all the way to the very top of the red? Like, why did that matter to them to have those levels?
They just wanted more resolution.
You're in the red. You're so close to blowing the mission. Shut up.
Yeah.
I mean, but why'd they need the green and yellow? It could have just been a bar.
That is a nitpick of nitpicks right there.
It is a nitpick.
We're really scraping the bottom of
why
the barrel.
Why is there multicolored bars that are one solid color?
Why wasn't it rainbow? Yeah. But for real, like, I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
One thing I thought was, like, was the Jean Reno, when he climbs up to the vent, why is he greeting him with a knife in his hand? He's like, merci. And he takes the Nautilus. And he's got was he going to kill Ethan right there?
Yeah,
run away?
I think, like, he killed the mouse.
But he did use the knife. Yeah. I don't think he didn't see any mouse blood anywhere.
And also, the mouse is already dead. He was using two hands on the rope. Then he was like, oh, let me take my knife.
Yeah,
again.
Let me pick my knife back up.
Yeah, no, like, no, you know. I think that was just another thing that was a nod towards, like, who is the real bad guy.
Oh, do you think they were like, trying to show us the second time, look at this knife in slow motion?
I don't know.
I think it was just basically like there's a lot of misdirection of like who could be the bad guy, how many people are the bad guys. And it's just another way because they kept showing him as pretty shady, and it was just another, like, that's threatening. So from a director's point of view, it'd be like, how do you convey that to the audience? That would be my guess. That's my guess.
But you could also, like, he pulled out the knife to kill the mouse. Maybe the mouse turned around and ran away, and he just still had his hand.
No, there's a mouse dead body next to
him. Well, that's why it was plausible. So that's why it's kind of genius. It's like going, it's not only threatening, but it's also plausible because he was maybe going after a mouse that was going to, you know, make him turn into toast.
Yeah. I have a question about your thoughts on the music.
I thought it was great.
Oh, that was pretty good. Yeah. I know where they pulled it in.
So the reason I'm asking your opinions on the music.
Was it Danny Elfman?
It was Danny Elfman. Yeah. But.
I didn't know that.
He was not originally the composer on this movie.
Oh.
There was another person that was brought in, apparently wrote probably 23, 25, something like that, minutes worth of music before he was taken off of the project.
Someone else
was actually in doing it first, had actually got music, and there are bootleg copies out there with this person's music in there. The original composer was the one that I've gone on and on about that's done Back to the Future, Forrest Gump, Avengers.
No,
it was
way.
Alan Silvestri.
It was Silvestri.
What?
And there is music. You can literally pull
Why'd
up
they
scenes
kick him out?
On YouTube
what
where they put his music in there. And depending on the scene, some scenes, I was watching them back to back. Some scenes, I do prefer Danny Elfman's.
Mm-hmm.
Some scenes, like there's a whole scene with the helicopter when it's chasing the train and going through into the tunnel that has Alan Silvestri's music composed on it. I like his better.
Oh.
Apparently, one of the reasons they moved on is both the director and Tom Cruise didn't care for Silvestri's music because it had a bit of a slightly different tone and had a use of electric guitar.
Okay.
And I think the music actually sounds very good, but like I said, depending on the scene, like they have it with the train scene. I think they've also done it with the scene in the restaurant with the water there. You can watch that. And I'm like, Danny Elfman's is a little better.
I think
there.
The train scene was one of actually the weaker parts of the music of the movie.
Yeah.
It was actually reminiscent of the freaking race scene in James Bond. It was like kind of just like noises, not very musically.
Yeah, I think I think the best part we always remember is when he jumps on the helicopter and the Mission Impossible team kicks in.
Yeah.
That's the coolest part.
I'll cut here and then pick back up afterwards, but go ahead and pull that up.
Okay.
So
I was wanting to do that.
What you think about
I was
it.
Absolutely wanting to do that. I was sitting here thinking, like, I'm going to do this later.
No. I'm like, pull it up because I want to get your guys' thoughts.
So there's a direct YouTube video about, like...
Yeah, I'll include the link to this in the description and everything if
Mission
you want to watch it yourself. But then we'll just cut forward
Silvestri.
To talking about what you guys think of it.
Okay. Back to it?
Yep.
So if y'all didn't notice, we just cut away and we actually went and watched the alternate version of that train scene. And I think I agree the Alan Silvestri version was cooler. It was better. But for sure, I would think overall the movie's music still was pretty great.
I didn't have a problem with the music at all. But I was like, everyone here and anyone who's actually watching knows I have a fondness for Silvestri and his music. So even leaving that aside, I still just liked it better in certain scenes.
Yeah.
Than Danny Elfman's, but there were other scenes where I'm like, his felt a little too epic for what was going on, like in the restaurant scene, where Danny Elfman's was better there because it's a little more muted.
The Silvestri one, just from that one scene, I haven't seen what you're just talking about. It's like, that's definitely the type of music that's trying to lead your emotions. Mm-hmm. Like, it's trying to be like,
that's what music in a movie
is supposed to do. And it is, but it's too much because you're already getting that from the scene to the point to where it almost takes away from me. Like, there, like, we're talking about, like, leading into the tunnel.
I get what you're saying now. It's leading, like, the music becomes a focus rather than being a supporting.
So what rather than, just being kind of there.
He hates Indiana Jones. He hates Star Wars. He hates Back to the Future.
No!
He hates Avengers.
I think he's trying to say it works.
He hates Jaws.
Oh, God. You just want to stop.
All the scores you remember because they were so great.
I hate all of those. Then they let them. All of those classics. Hate them entirely because of their music. Their dumb music. Their dumb, epic, bombastic scores.
He hates the
terribleness.
Pop music. You know, he just hates it because it leads your emotions.
Yeah, no. No, seriously, though. I actually, like, part of that, like, the first half of that train scene, I like Silvestri's. Leading into the tunnel. And then when it got to the tunnel, I actually liked the Alien-style Danny Elfman version of it, where it was less the focal point. More on because, like, you got a freaking helicopter chasing after a bullet train in a tunnel with a guy hanging on that. You don't want to, like, like, you know, just going crazy until they actually cut to the music. Like, the epic, the Mission Impossible song. Like, when that happens, it underscores everything until that point.
But
and then you get the payoff,
exactly,
and that's awesome.
Like, in certain sections, Silvestri's was better. But in other sections, Danny Elfman.
Yeah, no, I bet you if we went through all of it and it, like, actually was properly mixed, I'd be like, I like this one better. I like this one better. But it'll be scene dependent.
Yeah,
yeah. One thing I'll say about the Silvestri version is, for people, you can go search in YouTube, but it is definitely a big score of, like, it feels massive. It feels like a big open battlefield scene that's epic proportions. And this scene is a little more tighter and, like it's very close up on, like, two people struggling on a train with a third in the helicopter. So I feel like the setting of this is more smaller and the music video is bigger. But if it was mixed in well, I probably would have liked it.
Well, yeah, and
it is. It's
well,
memorable.
We don't have a mix of it. It's just the music. So.
And well, and there's just what I get when I watched that was there was so much promise to it. Yes. That I wish I could have seen what it would have been like, because, like, you go to today and, you know, the only song you really remember is the title music.
Right.
And Alan Silvestri's, there could have been maybe multiple scores that we would still be like, oh, yeah, that's that Mission Impossible song, you know? So...
I still love that right there, by the way. That
I wanted to
the
talk
blade,
yeah.
the blade
how do you
that
guys,
stopped.
The, how do you guys like to... the full everything's revealed now. We know this is a bad guy, this is this, and it's all gonna happen. So the final stunt starts of the movie, set piece. So how did you guys like the train set piece, the train and the helicopter set piece, or how do you feel?
I have one complaint. And that's going very broad with the idea that, like, oh, yeah, somebody flew a fucking helicopter into a small-ass tunnel. No, they didn't. No, my small complaint is, like, when he's about to use the little gum stuff to blow him up. Instead of just doing it, he's like, red light, green light! I'm like, would you really do that? Like, he could have just tilted the thing and thrown you off the helicopter.
A little bit
quick.
Over the
top. You're like, get up there and blow him up.
The explosion is hilarious, though, because Tom Cruise is, like, thrown. From it, and it's like the green screen is a little apparent where he's just blown. You're like, dude, that was like a tiny gummy that exploded. Like, you don't get propelled forward that much.
I like the foreshadowing Like, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, yeah. The
well,
force
I'm fine with him doing it. Like, I didn't like him yelling that.
I was fine with that because it's awesome with the scene with the adrenaline pumping. I'm like, okay, sure, that's great. Because it actually did set it up. Like, you know, some movies where it would have been like a Deus Ex Machina and he just like throws a little bomb or whatever and he wins mm-hmm. the day. No, the red light, green light was all set up. And then like how he said it, sure, I get that. But I'm just like, at the time,
they
it's
even
fine.
Foreshadowed the person
flying. He
didn't
yell red light, green light when he used it earlier.
Yeah, no. But he wouldn't have. But this is kind of a difference.
You don't have to yell that.
There's
to
a
make
little
a
adrenaline
work.
Going on here. Yeah.
That's his when he's trying to say fuck you.
Yeah.
Right. Like, exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's why he did it.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, I have to ask, before we get into voting, mm-hmm. does anyone have any final thoughts they want to throw out there about
anything? Oh, dang, we're already final. No way we're at final thoughts already. Yeah. I got so much more I want to talk about this movie.
Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, We've been going for about 45 minutes.
Look at... Oh. Okay.
It's okay.
I don't even know what else is there to really talk about.
What did you want
to
talk about?
Okay. Can I please?
Can you do a brief?
Can I please at least talk about the thing I hated the most about this movie?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I said final thoughts.
Okay. Well, I mean, I don't know if that's my final thought, but the thing I hated the most about this movie was Claire's presence. Like, I feel like she was not even an aspect of them. Like, she wasn't. She had no reason to even be there. For most of the movie, she didn't play a huge role. She was just there to be eye candy, really.
She was there for John Boyd's character to get his cuckold rocks off.
I don't... Seriously, like, she played no big... Like, you were talking about Natalia in freaking Goldeneye. Like, she... Or you were. I can't remember. Like, she really did stuff. She was a crucial part of the story. Mm-hmm. Claire was just kind of there.
Mm-hmm. Claire was there because I think... I think she is the driver for making him go steal again and trying to... I think there was something where John White says towards the end in the train of like, he knew that Claire's charms would work on him.
Yeah.
Even though Claire wasn't sure. So she was there mostly to motivate Tom Cruise to do.
But he was motivated by the fact that he was disavowed.
There's a story reason for her to be there. But as a character, she had like what we talked about in the GoldenEye episode, she had almost no agency, nothing to do herself. She was literally just there to drive the plot.
She was there to take the bullet for Tom Cruise.
and to poison the guy.
Those are like the two things she did the entire freaking movie.
Yeah.
And then like the whole thing with him like letting her off the hook too, like, but I kinda like you, so you're okay. Like, you're the bad guy, but you're fine.
She was dying. Why be in her face and be like, listen, bitch, while she's dying, like, you're dead. It's okay.
But he was like sentimental toward her. Like, he didn't do that to his boss. He's like,
but
no,
I mean,
screw
like,
you.
He just found out that she, like, he was suspicious, but he had just found out that she had, in fact,
that means he should have been even more angry. Like,
he was also supposedly in love with her too.
Well, see, there's that too. Like, they didn't really explain or like let that develop enough for sure.
Thou shalt not covet
thy neighbor's wife.
Yeah
and I mean, Max says Job doesn't quote Bible, and then he comes and quotes Bible right there. She does like a little peck on his cheek and maybe almost kisses him and goes away and then holds his hand a little.
Well, there's one time like he's kind of like up in her face for a second, and like it just it's really awkward for a moment, and then he pulls back. But
they didn't develop it enough, and they didn't develop her enough. It just felt like there was no real reason for her to be there.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
No, you're not wrong. Well, me being the host, my vote does not matter, but. I actually really like the entire Mission Impossible series, not necessarily because it's like, oh, fantastic, great writing that's worthy mm-hmm. of Academy Awards and stuff like that. No, they're fun popcorn flicks. Like, they're absolutely enjoyable. I personally think Mission Impossible 1 is the worst of all of them.
Oh, wow. That's a take.
But by a very thin margin. Like, to me, they're all pretty even. Like, this one's not bad at all. I just like a little bit more action with it than this one has. Versus this one's a little more muted and a little more... Like, it has action scenes, but it's more like spy thriller. They're not really like...
So Mission Impossible 2 really got your
rocks
off.
No.
You needed Mission that Impossible. Slow motion jumps.
Mission Impossible 2, I think the story is slightly better, but the action is like a little over the top and ridiculous. So yeah. It has points above this one, but then also has points below this one to essentially like make it even keel. Long story short, I like the entire series. I fully plan to go see the new one when it drops, but I would say this is still cool.
Cool. Okay.
So who wants to go next?
I can go. I'll fight you on the, this is the worst. I think this, you're right in the sense, I think this just sits different from everything else. Mm-hmm. This was like a psychological thriller, whodunit, spy thing, right? Like with the really cool heist in the middle. But yes, it's very, very psychological. It's very, very character like, oh, you betrayed me. Like, that's a big thing in here. Whereas in the other movies, betrayal is just like, yeah.
It's the name of the game.
Name of the game is just double-crossing left and right, right? And him, I think his stakes are bigger here because no other movie starts with his team being white. And this team, right? Like, his team is actually, I mean, one of the two characters I didn't get much, but the technician on top of the lift, Emilio Estevez felt like
I was going to say that's a sticking point for me. The fact that they killed Coach Bombay right at the beginning of the movie is a little annoying.
Way to go with the dad joke, a sticking point.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. Stuck, man.
Yeah, he definitely got stuck.
So
I just now realized what you were saying. Oh my gosh. But I was just mad Coach Bombay died.
He was great. The other character, I don't know her name. She was the one who's the inside in the embassy who comes, greets him, takes him around, and is the partner going in there and dies at the gate, killed by Jean Reno. The knife dude, right? So I thought like those, because they had banter, there are other things, and I like in the first 10 minutes, I really was like, oh, this is a cool team.
It got you attached to those characters quickly.
Yeah, it did. Quickly. Yeah. And then they kill everyone. And I don't think other Mission Impossible movies have, spoilers, so I won't say it. But the most recent one, right? But they don't usually kill that often. It's very rare. And in here, it's like, here's an amazing team. Boom, everyone's dead.
Well, that's not true. Just people from his team that die all the time. It's not usually his whole team.
Not his whole team. Beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
The very first setup in Mission Impossible 3, he is actually now a trainer, and he's actually not doing it. Yeah. He's going to get married, and the person he trained that just went down to the field got captured, and he has to go get her back, and she dies while he's trying to get her
Felicity,
back.
Whatever her name is. She played a character, Felicity. No, it was like a show called Felicity. That's how I know her.
He's making the point, though. Like, his entire team at the very beginning goes out.
So this is definitely more cerebral kind of movie. And the coloring is, the movie coloring and how it's done is very moody and dark and high contrasty. So I feel like, as cinematography, it feels like it's a little more artsy like that. The plot, I feel, is still a little complex. There, I don't think any other Mission Impossible has like that complexity there of layers of like, oh, this guy did this, and there's this now Max dealer in the middle. But yeah, so I thought it was really good. I loved the Langley heist, as improbable it might be. They still took great attention to detail. The little magnetic thing coming down and opening a screw and catching it is like,
that was
burnt.
Weird. Yeah.
I know, that was like, how did that work?
I was like, oh my god, could we ever buy such thing? The whole laser grid thing, where they like redirect the laser through a path back into its thing. The attention to detail to that. As a kid, I was just like blown away. I was like, oh my god, this is so amazing.
Yeah.
And I thought that's how mainframe was accessed, right? Like then like, they would put the Axis computer in this big thing. It's probably in the middle of a huge data center. but I th- the even the
mainframe was the data center.
When she shows up and hits the in the beginning of the movie, she hits the button for the fingerprint and they're scanning and trying to match. That I thought actually looked pretty cool. But him on the internet sending Job messages to all Bible groups.
Yeah.
I was like,
the
Usenet. I completely forgot we were on voting because he's been going on for so long. And I'm like, wait, we're supposed to be voting. What, what's your vote, man?
And he's trying to get his
my
extra stuff. Yeah,
2 cents
it's
in.
His final thoughts here.
Oh my
sorry.
God.
So I vote, it's still very cool. I vote it's, even watching it now, I did not get disturbed, did not get distracted. I just sat and I was entertained and I finished the movie. And there was the pacing, everything was amazing. Even the final stunt, I knew exactly what was going to happen, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was like seeing that come and I was like, yeah, there it is, the music's kicking in. So I fully
he knew he was
going to
win with bubblegum.
Yep.
Red line, gray line.
So my vote is cool. It's awesome.
All right, Mike, what's up?
I guess I'll go next. Pretty much agree with everything Andy said, in that, like, it was one of those movies back then where there were a lot of movies that came out that weren't super grounded, and this one I wouldn't say is super grounded, but, like, when it came to, like, this isn't just a spy movie, it's like a spy movie. Like, what's gonna happen if you get betrayed? Like, what happens on the inside? Like, how do you work? And it shows, like,
you'll
how they work.
Sequels.
It doesn't set up, like, the job, even though there's the job at Langley, mm-hmm. which is, like, you know, how the spies would actually work. But, like, the internal, like the stuff that goes on in being a spy. The machinations of being a spy, pretty much. I thought that was awesome. And then the movie just didn't treat the viewer as stupid. There was a lot of connective tissue that mm-hmm. you could watch it over and over again, and you might not even connect quite everything. Like, you know, the whole, like you actually point out the perfect thing of, like, what he saw, and the movie does kind of show that, but, like, you might even miss it the first couple times you watch it, what Ethan Hunt's character saw versus, like, you know, how John Voight's character was telling or everybody else's character was seeing it, totally different. And you, at some point, you figure out that he figured out all the connective pieces. And I think that was brilliantly done. And then you throw in the, I do like the Danny Elfman soundtrack. I think it was done really well. The cinematography is absolutely, like, to this day, I can't even think of another movie that quite looks like this. But, like, the coloring, the cinematography, the screen wipe sort of, or screen effect sort of stuff. Like, this movie absolutely stands out and is by itself on an island, as far as I'm concerned, with the other Mission Impossible movies. And I'll actually agree with you there. I think they're all really good. I just think I'm the opposite, where I think Mission Impossible 1 is, it's on an island on its mm-hmm. own. It was
the
original.
The way they did it.
Everybody, all the rest of them yeah. kind of copied that and kind of dumbed it down. Not dumbed it down, but, like, streamlined it enough. Where this was just, like, messy enough to be, like,
I think they made
awesome.
It, like, let's get to the next stunt. Like,
yeah. You know, like, and over time, it did kind of, it was definitely a Tom Cruise stunt vehicle. And that's fine. I like that, too. But this movie, for me, stands out. Even among all the other movies, not just Mission Impossible movies, but all the other movies that I watched, especially at the time in which I watched it, because it was like, it took at least a small amount of intelligence to put everything together and to get all the things. And working through that was fun for me. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate the movie for that. And I love that. So for me, absolutely cool.
Yeah. As you were saying, I remember, like, thinking iconic things that I always remember. Even the shot of Ving Rhames or Rhames or whatever in the, like, the fire truck, just looking left and right as he's parked outside Langley. Like, that's also just burned in my memory. I don't know why. There's so many bits and pieces from this movie that are, like, forever in my memory, like, seared in. Yeah.
Deuce.
All right. Well, my vote doesn't matter. And everything that I wanted to say has pretty much already been said, but I will say, like, there were definitely weak points to the movie. Like the Claire character, mm-hmm. and the shot of him shooting himself being, like, totally obvious and stuff like this. But, like, overall,
I thought when they originally showed it, it was more cut in where you couldn't quite tell. And then later on, you got to see more.
We can go watch it.
I mean,
yeah, this,
I actually,
like,
in, like I said,
so
I actually didn't get a chance to rewatch
it. Excuse of, like, how he died. It was
but
the gym
I remember having that same problem. And I think I remember rewatching it and being like, oh, they changed the edits. Like, where the later one was more obvious. So, but I'll have to go double check that.
Yeah, maybe
so
it's just
that's,
you didn't catch, like, it the first time or something. Yeah. Whereas this one, you have a lot of pieces that were good, some pieces that were bad, but you put it all together and somehow it became greater than the sum of the parts. Like, it That's was fair. Just so overall amazing. I think it still absolutely stands up today. Definitely cool. And nothing else to say there.
This is so strange. Like, having us unanimous on mm-hmm. things,
which is rare.
So rare that I'm starting to wonder if you've been paid off to agree.
No, it was Max.
I'll be honest. I was worried. I was scared with GoldenEye that you are going to show up and be like, "That was a classic." And then I was watching. Mission
I was
Impossible.
Too. And when we went to Starship Troopers, we got to see it in the theater just a couple nights ago, and they both said they basically hated the movie. I was just like, "Oh, thank God."
Who said they hated GoldenEye?
GoldenEye.
Not Starship Troopers. Starship Troopers.
Yeah, no, I love Starship Troopers.
Maybe that's why we're here making a podcast.
I mean, Andy obviously hates Starship Troopers because he didn't go. We went, so he hates it. So
I just like my son a little more. That's
well, see, we like the movie better than our kids. So
no, I was worried about. I know it sounds unanimous, but I was worried someone's gonna come in and say, this is like all weirdo. What is
it's
for all the right. Dutch
we'll pick something else next time to make sure there's some dissent among
the
ranks.
We need some divisiveness. We need some hot takes.
Have some arguing going on.
That's all right.
But you heard it here. Mission Impossible is still cool. Let us know if you like it or which of the series is your favorite.
Go watch movie one again. Just go
watch
it again.
Yeah, go watch it again.
It's so different. Look how young and clean Tom Cruise's face looks.
As opposed to now. His age has finally caught up with him. But, I mean, this movie was 30 years ago, so it's been a minute. But thanks for watching. Make sure you hit all the buttons that you need to hit to see us next time. And see you.
Later.
See you next time.